For years, there have been calls and even pleas for more of the energy that we use to power our homes and businesses to come from renewable sources. In western Wisconsin, and specifically around the city of Eau Claire, there has been a response over the last few years. Utility companies have offered what are called community solar gardens, in which customers can buy stakes in the project. Also, the city of Eau Claire has pledged to up its renewable energy game with a pledge to get its energy from carbon-neutral sources by 2050. This hour, we're talking renewable energy in western Wisconsin, right here on the west side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. In the studio, I've got two guests and one on the phone. First, I'd like to introduce Kate Beaton. She is a city council member for the city of Eau Claire. Kate Beaton, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also in the studio in Eau Claire is Mark Storing. He is president of Xcel Energy Wisconsin and Michigan. Mark Storing, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rich. Good morning.
Good morning. Also, joining us by phone is Tyler Huebner. He is executive director of Renew Wisconsin, and he joins us from his office in Madison. Tyler, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Rich.
It's our pleasure. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Join the conversation. We're talking about renewable energy in western Wisconsin. Do you think that the state, the local governments, individuals are doing a good enough job trying to augment where we get our energy from? And do you think it's time that we dump fossil fuels completely? Is it possible, in your opinion? Let us know, 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines, and these discussions are, I think, always much better when we have participation from the folks at home. Let me start off with Tyler. First off, like, the basic question that I've got, we're hearing a lot about these projects. There's wind projects in one part of the state. You know, there's solar energy garden, solar community gardens happening in Eau Claire. Also, I just learned they're happening in La Crosse and elsewhere. Are we still, how do we rate in terms of renewable energy as a state as a whole, or, you know, do we still have work to do, in your opinion, Tyler?
Well, I think we definitely have work to do, and we have a big opportunity in front of us. You know, kind of the first wave of technology that really climbed down the cost curve and became very cost competitive was wind energy. And as you look at Wisconsin and our neighboring states to the west, Minnesota, Iowa, and the Dakotas over there, it's a lot windier there. We do have good wind in Wisconsin. We do have a good wind resource, and we can develop that more. But as our utilities kind of looked around, they built some in Wisconsin, about a third of what they have, and they've built about two-thirds of what they have for wind in other states. As we look forward now, and solar energy has become very cost competitive, our utility companies are looking at adding a lot of solar, and the sun shines just as much here as it does in those other states. So we have a big opportunity to add a lot of solar power to Wisconsin as we look ahead.
Tyler, I will remind you that you're talking to people that just dealt with 10 inches of snow. But sun is shining, though. I will say the sun is shining. Mark Storing, if I can go to you, Xcel is going, I mean, you've got a wide renewable portfolio for the company as a whole, but we've seen some specific solar projects. So why solar? Why is that? Is it becoming cost competitive, as Tyler mentioned?
Yeah, thanks, Rich. Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand where we are today. We've been at this, integrating more renewable energy, cleaner energy to our portfolio predominantly since the mid to late 80s. But it's important to know where we are today. Today, if you're an Xcel Energy customer in Wisconsin, 25% of your energy comes from renewable energy sources. More than half of that is generated from carbon-free sources. That's a mix of a lot of different things. Tyler mentioned the wind. We're proud of our national leadership position in wind. Our customers in western Wisconsin benefit from the wind on our system, even though we get it from points west, because we operate our total system on the upper five states, the NSP territory, as a single integrated system. So they get the benefits of that, but we've increasingly been adding balance to the portfolio. That balance is solar as well. We talked a little bit about our solar programs in Wisconsin. I'm sure we'll talk about more. But the story is actually a little better than that for us in Wisconsin. We have 19 hydro facilities on the XL Energy System on nine rivers. Some of those assets have been around more than 100 years. Mm-hmm. We've got a world-class biomass facility up north and a waste-to-energy plant in La Crosse as well. So we like to think of it as a portfolio. As we've been adding more renewable energy and being able to retire fossil and thermal energy, we've been replacing that with renewable energy and more natural gas, which is increasingly competitive and only about half the carbon emission of other thermal assets like coal. Mm-hmm. It's also more rapid responsive to follow the renewable resources as well. So continue to move closer. We've got fairly aggressive plans to continue to make that portfolio cleaner in the future.
Just to follow up, more rapid responsive to follow the renewable. What does that mean? You can kick it on if you need more power because it's a cloudy day or something?
Yeah, that's exactly what it means, Rich. So if you're operating larger thermal plants, coal plants, for example, and incidentally, we're down to only three in the upper Midwest. Mm. But if you're operating those, what I would call big metal plants, they're a lot harder to adjust when the sun shines or the wind blows and that resource changes. Natural gas package is much more quick to respond. Yeah. You can essentially follow the wind or follow the sun, if you will, and be able to accommodate that more. Wind and solar and all the renewables have priority on our system. So if the sun shines or the wind blows, we take it. We take it in the upper Midwest. That's the first energy used. But you have to back off the rest of the system, and that's a big trick that I think we've been getting better and better at as we've integrated more and more renewables.
That's interesting, and it's one part of the soup one ingredient that I hadn't even thought of, that, you know, it would be wasteful to just keep things going full bore without it. Kate Beaton, what is local government's role in here? I mean, Eau Claire, I'm not sure how the cities like Chippewa Falls or farther to the north, Hayward, et cetera, Spooner, if they've got similar plans. But Eau Claire has this really ambitious plan by 2050, excuse me. Why? And do you think that we're doing a good enough job? Is that enough that to make a pledge like that?
Yeah, I think that local government has a strong obligation to lead the way in terms of renewable energy and setting aggressive goals to curb, you know, negative effects that dirty energy may cause. Mm-hmm. I think that the city of Eau Claire has done a pretty good job so far in our 25 by 25 goal that was set in 2009 or 2010. It was a goal of 25% renewable energy by 2025. That goal had been accomplished on the electricity side, not quite accomplished on the fuel side. Mm-hmm. And so to kind of reevaluate those goals and set more aggressive goals for the longer term, I think is I'm really proud of that. I can't speak for the intentions of other communities, I'm really hoping that the actions by the city of Eau Claire inspire other communities to do the same. As far as I understand it, our goal in the city of Eau Claire, with the combined goal of municipal carbon clean energy goals, as well as city goals, clean energy citywide. That combination of goals, as far as I understand it, are unique to the Midwest. While other cities in the Midwest have set those goals for the municipality, I believe that we're the only ones to set those goals citywide. So we're proud of that. I know that there are other communities in Wisconsin who have seen what we've done and are now considering doing the same. So that was a big hope of mine in doing this.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in with your questions or comments for our guests. This hour we're talking about renewable energy in western Wisconsin. We're seeing increased use of it in and around Eau Claire, but also beyond. 1-800-228-5615. If I can just follow up with you, Kate, you mentioned municipal versus city. A lot of people don't know what the difference is. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so the municipality operates like an organization. We light our buildings, we fuel our buses and our police fleet. We spend energy to pump the water out of the ground and send it to people's homes. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of cities around the country and around the Midwest have set goals to reduce or to switch that energy consumption over to clean energy, which is great, super important. The goal that the city of Eau Claire has set includes that, but also a goal for private citizens and industry to switch their energy usage over to renewables as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's a hefty goal, but we intend to work with partners like Xcel Energy to help that along. We really wanted to be more than just setting a good example for the private community. We wanted to set these goals and help facilitate that private energy usage, clean energy usage as well.
Tyler Huebner, the how important is the example setting that we see happening in Eau Claire, other local governments across the state? You know, Xcel Energy is going beyond, the requirements that were set in Wisconsin law, et cetera, in terms of its renewable portfolio. Do those kind of actions actually spur the average citizen to do it themselves at home?
Well, I think it does. I think we're seeing a lot of leadership as we look across the state and even across the country in a variety of facets. And for a long time, it was individuals. And in Wisconsin, we've got this rich history of an event called the Energy Fair over in Custer by Stevens Point area, where, some of the early wind turbine and solar panel tinkerers in the whole country were congregating there and starting this industry up. And that put Wisconsin on a leadership path. And then we've seen utilities adopt it. We've seen local governments continuing to push the way. And we're seeing a lot more corporations, too, large corporations all across the country and now even in Wisconsin, Organic Valley, based out of Cashton, Gunderson Health System for a long time based in La Crosse has been a leader and done a lot on wind, solar, biomass, energy efficiency. So I think all of these actions add up and it just depends who different people look to as leaders and who they might follow. But the more actors we have stepping up, and local governments is a key one and our power companies is a key one to see this is possible, that it makes economic sense. It's going to continue to accelerate this trend.
So, Mark Storing, why do this? I mean, I would think, I'm not an expert by any means, but I would think that getting energy from coal is probably cheaper than going out and, switching over your plants to natural gas or even, building these community solar projects. So, if you're not being forced to do it by, I know that Wisconsin had a goal of 2025 or 2020, something like that. I can't remember the exact plan. Maybe you can fill us in on that. But why continue down that path if you don't have to?
Yeah, it's a good question. First of all, our customers want it. And so being able to provide new products and services that our customers want makes good business sense. But then to your point on how cost-effective it is, it may surprise you that wind is very cost-effective. It is some of the most cost-effective energy we can put on our system. Now, it's intermittent. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always blow. You have to manage that aspect of it. But wind energy is the most economic source of energy right now. You just have to be able to accommodate that in your system, be able to follow it as we discussed. It's considerably less cost than coal. Now, we haven't built a coal plant in our company. I've been with Xcel almost 30 years. I've never been part of building a coal plant in the upper Midwest. Hmm. We have absolutely no intentions of building one anytime soon. But you have to look at the cost of coal these days is very expensive in terms of the fuel is cheap, but the cost is expensive. You have to manage the emissions. I think a lot of our peers in the country have appreciated that is not the way to go going forward, that there are just plain cheaper alternatives. Natural gas is a cheaper alternative. Wind is a cheaper alternative. Increasingly, solar is a cheaper alternative as well.
Kate, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I Mark, you said that your customers want it, and I think the City of Eau Claire in the analysis that we've done absolutely support that in preparations for these goals.
What kind of analysis? I mean,
sure.
Do you poll residents or what?
Yeah, so we started looking at doing something like this back in June 2017, and between that time and about December or January, the City Sustainability Advisory Committee did some surveying of the community as well as surveying of our energy consumption and putting together a good plan for how we might move forward. And in that survey that they did for that, we found some really interesting results. And one of them, and I think one of the most compelling, was that 82% of people in Eau Claire who were surveyed expressed a willingness to pay at least $10 more in their energy usage in order to switch over to renewables. Now, some folks committed or expressed a willingness to pay even more than that, up to $200 more per month. And so I thought that was really compelling. 82% of people in Eau Claire are willing to pay more for clean energy. And I think that says a lot and really backs up with what Mark is just saying.
How many people were sampled? Because I'm wondering if you got around to my neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the Sustainability Committee had done that over the last couple months, and unfortunately, that's not a number that I know.
Okay,
that would be a good question for Ned Noel, who's our city planner and conducted the survey.
And also Globetrotter, I think.
Yeah,
he can't defend himself. So, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got our first caller of the morning, and we're going to go to Glenwood City, I believe. And
hi there. Thank you. This is Christina.
Hey, Christina. Very what's up?
I'm interested in solar energy. So I'm wondering, I've got three questions regarding that.
Three.
What is the process to add solar to an existing property? What is a ballpark cost? And what programs are available to assist homeowners with this conversion?
Holy moly. Those are some Tyler questions if I've ever heard them.
Yeah.
Tyler Huebner.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Great questions. You know, the first thing is to, you know, look at your property, and if you've got ideally a south-facing exposure or open land where you can face solar panels pointing south, if they point east or if they point west, that's okay too, because the cost for the equipment has come down a lot. But south-facing is best, clearly. The second is shading and making sure that it's not shaded very much or at all, ideally. Third is, if you're going to put on your roof, what's the age of your roof? What's the quality of the roofing structure itself, but also the shingles? If you need to replace those anytime soon, ideally you want to replace those before you put the solar panels on top of them, just because you want a 20, 25, 30-year roof, because the solar panels are warranted for 25 years, and you don't want to have to take them off to put new shingles on. Those are a few of the things you want to look at before you go down the road. Also, you know, I would say that we have a really great network of solar installers that all throughout the state, but that cover the state. And so talking to those professionals is always a great idea from the start. As far as programs that are available in the state, we do have rebates through our statewide Focus on Energy program. That program has a lot of rebates and incentives for a variety of energy conservation upgrades as well, but we do have them for solar panels if you're a homeowner. It's 12% of the cost of the system, up to a max of $2,000 is what those incentives are available. And you can learn more about that at focusonenergy.com, I believe, or if you do your search engine for Focus on Energy Wisconsin, you'll find those programs. Did I might have missed one of your three questions in there.
Well, she did mention ballpark costs. Can you throw a number out there,
the cost,
Tyler?
Yes. Yep. If you're looking at a home, about a 6-kilowatt solar panel system is kind of enough to produce enough electricity for the average home in Wisconsin. Now, some homes use more and some homes use less, so you need to look at that. But if you're looking at that size of system, it's about about $18,000 before two things. One is the Focus on Energy incentive, which, you know, that would be around $1,800 or $2,000 for a system like that. And then a federal tax credit that's also in place that, that gives you a 30% federal tax credit, and that's in place 2018 and 2019, and it starts to step down in 2020 and 2021. So you take that round, you know, $18,000, and it's about 40% off of that, and so you're looking at, you know, probably $11,000 after the rebate and the tax credit. So, again, you know, that's still $11,000, but about 10 years ago, that probably was about $30,000 or $40,000. Mm-hmm. The cost of installing solar has come down about 75% in the last decade. So it really is a good time to be looking at this.
Thanks for that, Tyler. So, Christina, are you going to pull the trigger or what?
Oh, I'd love to. I'm hoping to. I'll look into it and see what happens. So wish me luck.
All right. Good luck to you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good luck.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or comment, we're going to take our first break here on the west side. We're talking about renewable energy in western Wisconsin, both the private, on your private residence. Also, the utilities are getting involved in a big way. And the city of Eau Claire also has an ambitious plan to rid itself of fossil fuels by 2050. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment for our guests. They are Mark Storing, president of Xcel Energy Wisconsin and Michigan. Tyler Huebner is executive director of Renew Wisconsin. Kate Beaton is a city council member for the city of Eau Claire. We'll be right back.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
UWEC Continuing Education presents community classes for adults like The Local Life of Bees. Learn why these little buggers play a big role in our area Thursdays, April 26th through May 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. Information at the Continuing Education website.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about renewable energy projects in western Wisconsin and whether or not we're doing a good enough job about it. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment for our guests, in no particular order. They are Executive Director for Renew Wisconsin, Tyler Huebner. He joins us by phone from his office in Madison. Kate Beaton is in the studio with us here in Eau Claire. She is a city council member for the city of Eau Claire. And Mark Storing is with us as well in the studio, president of Xcel Energy Wisconsin and Michigan. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. Say, Tyler Huebner, I wanted to follow up with you. You mentioned, well, you were just talking to Christina about the cost of individual solar projects on the residence, kind of got me thinking. It seemed like earlier on, the plan was, or at least it seemed to be the focus, is that if you're going to do solar, you're going to do it on your property one way or another. You know, we didn't really hear about these community solar projects. So what is, do you think that there's kind of a sea change happening here where people might be investing in these community projects and keeping the panels off their property, or is it kind of a mix?
Well, your insights are great. It's a great lead into what I think is a trend that we're about to see, and yes, we're seeing more and more homeowners and more businesses, as well as nonprofits, local governments, look to put solar panels on their own properties. And really, the benefit of that is that the electricity, you know, goes to that property and reduces your utility bill, but mm-hmm. you know, whatever type of customer you are. What we're seeing now is the cost of solar has come down so much, and Mark alluded to this, is that at the utility level now, solar is cost competitive for various, you know, applications. It's not going to replace natural gas. It's not going to replace a nuclear baseload plant. But if you think about when the sun is shining, and I know we had a lot of snow here, but, you know, May, June, July, August, September, in the middle of the day when our air conditioners are running mm-hmm. in those months, there's an increase in electrical usage typically during the summer and during the day in the summer. That's when the sun is typically shining and the solar panels are doing their best. So there's a way that that these large-scale solar projects can really meet the demand of the utility companies in those hours of the day in the summer. So we're seeing a lot of activity from our utilities down here in southeast Wisconsin, central Wisconsin. I know Xcel is doing a lot in Minnesota and other states, and looking at a lot in Wisconsin too, of even beyond community scale, but actually utility scale. So we're talking, you know, pretty large installations that would be, you know, 1 mile wide by 1 mile deep type of thing. So a really large expanse of solar arrays. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind for a lot of people is, wow, that might be a lot of land, and what are we doing with that land today? On the flip side of the coin is, you know, a lot of our farmers are really struggling. Corn prices are down. We've got really an oversupply of corn, and corn prices are pretty low right now.
Mm-hmm.
Milk prices are really low right now, too. So for farmers that have this type of land, there's an opportunity to diversify their income. If they are willing and able to lease part of their land out to a solar development and get that steady return off of that, that can diversify their income from the ups and downs of milk and corn prices. So we're seeing this start to play out, and I think this spring and summer we're going to start to see some announcements about some of these much larger solar projects, again, on the scale of being able to really provide at the level that the utilities need to think about. So it's an exciting opportunity for Wisconsin, we think.
That is an interesting thought, especially at a time when dairy farmers are really struggling. Mark Storing, you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, so I wanted to Rich, I was just going to agree on several points that Tyler points out, and then one that Kate did as well. So I agree with Tyler, it's going to be all three. And when I say all three, it's going to be more private solar or rooftop solar or customer-based solar. It's going to be more solar gardens like the one over at Sky Park, our Solar Connect community program. And it's going to be more utilities adding just general system resources that benefit all utility customers, not just those who may subscribe to a solar garden and effectively have private solar that is shared with a number of customers,
sure,
like a neighborhood of solar. So you're going to see more and more of that. But I agree with Tyler also in the aspect that much like wind, the early days of wind, where farmers essentially farm the wind,
mm-hmm,
and get a revenue stream from that as well, I would anticipate seeing that from solar too. Our partnership with the city of Eau Claire is really a terrific one over at Sky Park. That is the site of a city-owned landfill that I believe closed in 1965.
Mm.
I think the city had been looking for an application for that site probably since close to 1965. A solar garden that covers 7.5 acres, about 3,000 panels, is a wonderful non-invasive opportunity for that site. I like the idea that it's across the street from our headquarters, so my office looks at it. I often have an opportunity to invite people to ask them if they want to be part of that. After all, it is called Sky Park over there, but it's a wonderful, I sometimes like to say it's a wonderful brownfield to brightfield story, and the partnership with the city doesn't stop there. It's the city not only has got a revenue stream from leasing the landfill for the solar application, but the city is also a partner in terms of a subscriber as well, and is one of our good larger subscribers as well. So, just one last note on the gardens. So, the garden over at Sky Park and the to be built garden in La Crosse are already 92% subscribed. So,
yeah,
that gives
so much
you some
hunger for it.
So that gives you some sense for the customer appetite for this, and that's both residential customers and business customers. And just the last point, going to one that Tyler made and the caller made. So for a lot of our customers, they don't have a good roof or a good cant of the roof, or it doesn't face the right direction, or it's obstructed by trees, or they may rent or be in a multifamily dwelling. And a Solar Connect community program like ours gives them an opportunity, to participate with their neighbors, still have an opportunity to participate in solar energy. And I'd say, in fact, maybe a little bit better opportunity, universal solar, like the garden, is about half as expensive as the current pricing on some of the private solar or rooftop solar. And these systems vary dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to spend any more by participating in the garden. You avoid some of the upfront costs, the operations, the maintenance pieces of it, and it gives you a nice option if you don't have that private solar option at your residence.
Let's go to the phones now. We've got Leslie Joe, who has solar. She is calling from Polk County, or I'm not sure if there's a city of Polk, but Leslie, are you there?
I am here.
What's on your mind?
I have, I think, 49 solar panels spread over four different arrays. My first array I got in 2009, and I just kept adding. Every time I could afford to spend more money on it, I just kept adding another array. And I've now weaned myself, my house is off of fossil fuels.
Wow.
So I heat with wood, and all my appliances are electric. And last month, I sold 1,100 kilowatt hours to the utility. So I get checks from them.
That is an interesting thought. I think that's like a fantasy to a lot of people. So what do you love about it? And what are some of the headaches that you might warn people about, you know, to be prepared for anyway?
Well, I certainly would think twice about putting your panels on the roof because it'd be super hard to scrape the snow off of them.
Sure.
I just spent about a half an hour, you know, scraping 4 inches of snow off of my panels. Even though they're at an angle, it doesn't slide off.
Mm.
And so that, over the last 2 days, I've spent a lot of time scraping the snow off. But I just think that it's a matter of priorities, and I could have bought an Escalade, a Cadillac Escalade,
sure,
instead of having all these solar panels, but then I have the maintenance of it. Mm-hmm. The panels, I don't have to pay, you know, to have the oil changed. They don't lose their value right when you drive them off of the floor of
sure.
the showroom. So I just think it's amazing to be able to, you know, even in the winter, to be able to make that much electricity that I know I'm probably, you know, running my neighbor's house too.
That is very neat. Well, thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing your story.
Great topic. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Leslie Joe. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Let's go to Chris in Eau Claire. Chris, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I actually, I moved up to Eau Claire about a year ago.
Welcome.
Eau Claire is wonderful. But I came from Fitchburg, and one of the things they had in their park was a vertical, helical-looking windmill that powered their pavilions just for, the park area.
Sure.
And I'm kind of curious if Eau Claire has ever looked into doing anything like that. I know they got the beautiful Phoenix Park, and the nice thing about this vertical windmill is it looks like a sculpture.
Sure. So, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, those are really very cool. A lot of really neat designs as opposed to the big, you know, the big old mega turbines that a lot of people have mixed feelings about. So, Kate Beaton, you're on the spot. City of Eau Claire looking at possible wind energy generation.
Yeah, so in setting our goals, 100% renewables by 2050, we also set goals to continue a planning process over the next 32 years to figure out how we're going to achieve this hefty goal. And so we just set those goals in February and are just now beginning that planning process. And so I think that that's very possible in our future. I'll definitely look into that. And thank you, Chris, for that great idea, but I think that we'll see lots of innovative ideas like that and others come through that continuous planning process as we plan, you know, incrementally as technology improves and the market changes.
1-800-228-5615. The calls are still rolling in. I love it. Let's go to Jean in Plum City. Jean, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I would like you to please comment on how long it takes to recoup the carbon footprint from the manufacture of the equipment and the decommissioning of the equipment for solar and wind power.
Sure,
I'll
good
take points. My answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Gene. Tyler, do you have any insight into that? Because, you know, we're so focused on the actual energy that's generated, but we don't think about what goes into making those things.
Yeah, the numbers that I've heard are you know, it may have been different in the past, but now it's about a year, at least for solar, and I think it's probably about that for wind, that the energy it takes to manufacture, move, ship, get installed your solar project, you'll produce enough clean energy in about 1 year to offset all of the energy it put in materials that went into that project. So it really is a phenomenal
payback. And I don't have a source for that, and I'm sure there's various studies that have been done, but I know in the past there was some concerns about that, and everything I've seen is that it's about a year now, so which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and right. Ballpark anyway, but it does seem like the sort of thing that, you know, you're continually generating that offset, and so it's building it up, and eventually you would expect it, I guess, to make up for the actual manufacture. So I wanted to continue down this path here. We're talking a lot about solar energy, and Mark Storing, you mentioned that there's a solar project going up in La Crosse, and there's other plans for renewables. So does Xcel Energy have any thoughts or any hunger for creating a utility sized, you know, like a 1 mile by 1 mile or bigger solar project? Is Wisconsin the right candidate for that? Because I can't help but feel like we might not be as good a candidate as, say, your New Mexico or your Arizona, somewhere in the desert where the sunlight always shines.
Yeah, first on the third project we talked about off air, Rich, it's a project up in Ashland, another similar sized project. In fact, Tyler's organization is helping us promote subscriptions for that. Mm-hmm. We're holding our next 60 Minutes of Solar. It's a forum we've hosted a number of those, and Renew Wisconsin has supported those. And the next one is, in fact, at our Sky Park offices on April 26th. Any customer of ours in Wisconsin can subscribe to any solar garden. You don't have to live in Ashland to subscribe to the Ashland Solar Garden. As far as seeing more and more of those resources, I think you're going to see them. We already own and contract energy for rather large solar farms. Won't surprise you to hear that started where there was the best solar resource. We serve 8 states. We serve Colorado. South Central Colorado is a great solar resource.
Sure.
We serve West Texas, New Mexico, some pretty good solar regimes. So we're a little further ahead in some of those jurisdictions. Although I will say, in terms of community solar, the state of Minnesota has the largest community solar program in the nation by twofold.
Hmm.
Our community solar garden in Wisconsin is the state's largest community solar garden and growing as well.
Now, is solar, there's no magic bullet. You mentioned that wind generation is very efficient and you get a lot of bang for your buck out of wind generation. But is there any one that you can see? I mean, to me, it seems like solar seems to be kind of getting into the lead here. I'll ask you first, Mark Storing, then I'll go to Tyler to see if he has any thoughts. But, I mean, are we going to get to a point where it's strictly solar or strictly wind?
Yeah. In our business, I would first say in today's world, balance is good. I'm really proud of our history for an investor-owned utility, a national utility. We may have arguably the most balanced portfolio in the entire country with a portion of nuclear, coal, hydro, waste energy, solar, wind. We've kind of got the basis covered. But I think that balance is really important, and I would argue that being able to follow the intermittent resources, it takes a balanced portfolio to do that. So we watch that carefully. The one thing I would also add is most of our customers want cleaner energy and more energy options. But I will say all of our customers want reliable, affordable energy, and we're in the mix or put in the position to basically balance that. So we continue to do that. I mentioned at the open that we continue to work on greening or cleaning our nation-leading portfolio. So we're at the 25% renewable today, more than half of that being carbon-free. But in the next 10 years, we've already got plans in place to go to 35% renewable and more than 60% carbon-free. And we think, again, those plans are in place, and we think we can do that affordably, and our customers will welcome that. We've also proposed some to policymakers in some of our states here in the Upper Midwest recently of kind of what is the art of the possible. We've been spending a lot of time analyzing our grid to see how far can you push this? How aggressive can you be? How fast in terms of integrating more renewable energy? And we think we can push that even further. And we think we can do that at a pretty affordable cost and do that going forward. We think we may have an opportunity to even push the system to about 60% renewable coming from about 85% carbon-free resources at an affordable cost. And I keep saying that, which is an important aspect. But I think we've proven that we can do it cost effectively. Oftentimes, people who are critical of that type of an approach in that direction will say, well, you can't do it cost effectively. I've made the case that it makes good business sense. I would also say that I would point out to folks that even though we've been having rate cases in Wisconsin, total bills for our average residential electric customers are actually lower in 2018 than they were in 2013. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. But some of that is we're executing on what we call a steel for fuel strategy. While we're investing the capital cost in wind turbines and solar panels, we're not buying fuel. We're not incurring that O&M cost. And we're trying to do this in such a way at the speed of value with technology where you put that capital investment in place that's cost effective and offsetting the fuel costs and do that so your customers don't see an impact. They're net neutral to that. At the same time, we're taking costs out of our business just like everybody else is. Our customers are also using less electricity. Everything's more efficient. Technology is on our side. That's lowering the overall total bill as well. So directionally, we think we can continue to add and do that cost effectively and result in an affordable cost for customers.
Mark Tyler, I mixed up your names. Mark Storing, thank you for that. Tyler Huebner, excuse me. Renew Wisconsin, I know you can't pick a winner, but does it seem like any of the technologies are kind of getting ahead? Because, you know, I keep reading about, well, once they can figure out how to get X percentage of energy out of the solar panels, then that's it. And then also I've been reading, once we get these utility scale batteries, then that's it. So
well, you set me up really well again, Rich. Thank you so much. And Mark, great response, and I agree. You know, we like to say there's no silver bullet way to make power. There's no way that's all good and doesn't have any drawbacks. You know, solar power is great. It has no emissions, but the sun doesn't shine all the time. Wind power is great. It has no emission. The wind doesn't blow all the time. Coal power has some attributes, but they're radically or pretty quickly being, you know, replaced by sort of a wind plus gas in today's technology. As we look ahead, there's a couple exciting things, and I'm going to try to tee Kate up on something too. Rich, you mentioned batteries, and, you know, we see as we look forward energy storage being, you know, potentially that next technology that could be added to the mix to really help bolster the solar and the wind, and perhaps, you know, those combinations in the long run competing with natural gas to be, hey, can we do solar and wind and batteries, and does that give us the attributes of natural gas, which, as Mark mentioned, has about half the carbon of coal, but not zero carbon, right? And so those are going to be some of the interesting things that play out over the coming decades and why our industry and working in this field is so fascinating, because it really is changing very quickly. I'm going to pivot and maybe set something up for Kate and Mark on transportation. As the city of Eau Claire looks to get to, you know, dramatic carbon reductions and dramatic increases in renewables, one of the big things is going to be transportation. Headline out today is now, I think it's nationwide, our carbon emissions from all of our cars and trucks is now exceeding electricity because we're reducing the amount of coal dramatically, we're increasing the amount of renewables and electricity, and so now the next target is going to be on transportation. As we look at how do you get the carbon emissions out of that sector, you know, can we get more electric vehicles that are being charged up with wind and solar? Can we do that with our bus system? And these are things that are all technologies and policies and things that are going to play out over decades, but, you know, really exciting potential opportunities in the future. So I guess, you know, back to Kate, I mean, what's the city looking at as far as transportation and how to meet those goals? And maybe even to Mark, what's Xcel looking at as far as that type of rollout?
Sure. Kate, I've seen a couple, at least, I think there's one, maybe two hybrid buses. So there's a start. I'm not sure if that's actually owned directly by the city. But so what about this? What about the fleet?
Yes, I am so glad that Tyler brought this up. This is a big a big priority of mine, at least as one city council member. We do have, the city does own several hybrid buses. They are certainly helping us to reduce our dirty energy usage. And I would like to see us do more of that as we build up our transit system and retire old buses. They do come at a big price tag, and so I think that we'll see those kind of roll in slowly over the next several years. I think it's a really big priority of mine as well to build up the transit system so that folks are using public transit over their cars, mm-hmm. To reduce the amount of emissions that we're putting out privately as well as on the public side. So, you know, I'd like to see our transit system expand into something that's more reliable for the average citizen to be able to take to work or take to the grocery store with more regular stops and more routes. Of course, that's certainly a budget priority too, yeah. and a big decision that we'd have to make. But even beyond that, the city of Eau Claire has been a strong advocate for like over a decade on passenger rail. So, mm-hmm. You know, from city to city transportation to cut down on Wisconsinites and people even outside of Eau Claire using their private cars and emitting fossil fuels that way. And thirdly, I think the city of Eau Claire has done a really good job in progressing towards a more walkable and bikeable community. We talk a lot about complete streets and a street that is comfortable for a car, but also for a bicyclist or a pedestrian. And so I think that if we can implement more and more bicycle infrastructure and walking infrastructure so that people can get along about their way just by the energy of their own bodies, I think that we can see more carbon reduction that way.
Mark Storing, what about the Fleet for Excel? And we're up against a break, so and we do have one caller, Josh in Hayward. Hang on tight. So what about Excel's fleet? And
so fuel? Just real quickly, first, I really applaud the city for considering sustainability goals. I think they're looking at it correctly in terms of decarbonization because it brings so much more into it. It's not just the energy piece. It's the transport piece. It's probably building efficiency. I think I maybe even heard it was even waste treatment, that type of thing. And so having that type of a goal, looking at that holistically, I think is really impressive. I'm looking forward to partnering with the city and helping to be successful in achieving that. We see more and more electrification of vehicles in society. There's good evidence to believe from globally and auto manufacturers that they're going to have more options, neater options as well.
Yeah.
I think we're working hard to actually promote time of use. We have time of use rates in Wisconsin, so if you charge at the right times, there are some real economic advantage to EVs as well. I know we're up against a break.
Go ahead.
So I think you're going to see more of that as well. And I think that's going to be increasingly cost effective. So we've got to prepare for that, whether customers want that charging opportunity to be in their home, maybe paired with a battery, whether that's public charging, maybe that's interstate corridor charging, all of those things are going to come into that. I think the combination of renewable energy and electric vehicles is really interesting because if you can capitalize when you're generating renewable system, maybe even energy one day that exceeds the demand on the system to provide the right incentives, send the right signals to have people charge their vehicles or use renewable energy so you get that decarbonization and those hit those real sustainable goals, then it's not just renewable energy. It's much, much more.
Quick break. We'll be right back with a quick question about hydropower from Josh. Hang tight, Josh. We'll be right back on the West Side.
Support for WPR comes from WEA Member Benefits, dedicated to improving the financial health of Wisconsin public school employees by providing in-kind financial education. Knowledge is power. WEABenefits.com. Support also comes from the Driftless Sports Convergence, May 19th at the Onalaska Omni Center, sponsored by AARP Wisconsin and more. Silent sports equipment and outdoor exhibits on archery, biking, and more. DriftlessSports.com.
You're listening to the Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about renewable energy. We've got Mark Storing of Xcel Energy, Tyler Huebner of Renew Wisconsin, and Kate Beaton of the City of Eau Claire. Let's go to the phones now. Josh has been on the phone for a while. Josh, are you still there? I can just barely hear you. It's really muffled. If you can call back and give an attempt, but we're almost out of time. I apologize for that. Let me try this. How about that? Are you there? No, I can barely hear you in the headphones. I'm sure the folks at home can't hear you very well. You can try calling back. Question is about hydropower. And I just wanted to ask all of you, I'll start with you, Mark Storing, because you guys are in the hydro business. You've got competing interests here, even among environmental groups, because it's reducing fossil fuels. But a lot of people say dams are ecological disasters in a lot of ways. So is Xcel actively increasing hydropower, or are you just trying to maintain what's there? Or are you decommissioning? Because I'm seeing a lot of stories about dams being decommissioned.
Yeah, it's some of each, Rich. We are not investing in new hydro for the reasons you stated. Siting and permitting new hydro today would be very difficult. The hydro part of our business goes back to the earliest stages of our business. I mean, we can trace our roots all the way back to the 1870s. It started with logging and forestry, and we were really, at that time, the predecessors of Xcel Energy were kind of a byproduct for that industry. That industry's long gone, of course. We're still here today, but a lot of that initial power was hydropower. Some of our hydro assets are over 100 years old today. They're fully depreciating. They're run of the river. They've created some wonderful reservoirs for lake associations and recreation.
That's another part.
I think we try to be – I don't think – I know we've been very good stewards of those assets, but I don't see any new hydro. I think it's more of a sustained mode of what we've got. And over time, we have been decommissioning some of the smaller ones.
And Tyler, I'm going to give you the last word because we're out of time, basically. You know, we're seeing steps at the EPA to get rid of the Clean Power Plan, also to lift and to change or weaken fuel economy standards for vehicles. So, you know, how are you able to advocate for renewable energy when stuff like that's happening? What kind of a challenge does that give you?
Well, I'll say that luckily the technologies that we're really supporting, solar power, wind power, those two specifically, are really becoming market-driven. And so although politics and policies have been really important, and it's not that they're not important going forward, but we're just seeing that the market is driving this stuff. The costs are down. The technologies are getting better and better. And if we can have local governments like Eau Claire, corporations across the state pushing this stuff, it's going to keep driving the cost down and keep enabling utilities like Xcel to lead the way as well. So we're excited about the future.
All right, very good. I'm sorry that we're out of time. My guests today, thank you all for your discussion. Mark Storing is president of Xcel Energy Wisconsin and Michigan. Tyler Huebner is the executive director for Renew Wisconsin. And Kate Beaton is a city council member for the city of Eau Claire. Thank you all so much. Also, thanks to all the great calls we had today. Next week, we're going to try to talk about birds. If there's the spring migration is on. If you happened to be outside yesterday during the snowstorm, you heard chirping while 10 inches of snow was falling. So we'll try to talk about that next week. Many thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Bonnie Lenz Clark, Henry Lippold, Hannah Pritzel, and of course, Dean, the apiary extraordinaire, Colin Beck, and Kate Spranger. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.